expands rapidly in that silent place, and she feels fully a part of it for the first time. Suggestion, telepathy, control. Her skills grow and expand with each passing moment. She enjoys her time there with Master Turkay. And yet many times she realizes the strength of her pride when she forgets that Dale is not finding any of this easy. He cannot flow with the Force, and the more Turkay works with him, the less Dale wants to try. Lannery becomes frustrated and annoyed with his frequent displays of petulance. In the evenings, when they are eating and relaxing, she tries communicating with him. A sisterly touch on his mind, born of love and concern. Yet she's met with a deluge of chaotic thoughts, frightening, furious, and yet scared. As dusk falls on the third day and they make their way back to the temple, Lannery is enlivened by her successes and saddened by Dale's failures. She takes his hand, surprised when he holds on, and she smiles at him. She has an idea. A subtle push, and they are walking along the river back at home, close to Bodhi Temple. This is the one place where Dale feels most at peace with himself. Weave birds have been here recently, and countless golden threads are carried on the breeze. The river flows fast and heavy, swollen by recent rains in the hills of the Edge Forest. The air smells of blossom and hangs heavy with the promise of a family meal that evening, when their father will cook rumbat stew and their mother will read some of her poetry. It is beautiful.
It is false.
Dale squeezes her hand so tightly that she feels bones grinding, and the hookhawk wounds start to bleed again. Then he crumples to his knees in the sand and vomits. Lannery kneels beside him, wondering if she has done wrong. He hates her touching his mind, using the Force to invade his thoughts. They have fought about it more than once. But after so long in this strange place, she'd thought that perhaps he would have welcomed those thoughts of safety and calm, those images of home. When he looks up at her, she sees the venom of his gaze. She cannot touch his mind again to say sorry. Chapter 4. His Own Man.
Never place all your reliance in the Force. It's always there, but that does not mean it can always be called upon. Each Jedi is his own person with his own talents. Learn to use them. Nurture them. If the Force is the dream, you are the dreamer. And sometimes you have to wake up. Sometimes you are all you have.
Master Shalmar, A Life in Balance, 7523 TYA, Thoyor Arrival. Trisana had already told her more than the Jedi Masters who had sent her on this mission. They had mentioned a loose network of rich Kalamar, apparently involved in Dale's Stargazer sect, and Tree had backed that up with talk of tracking down a particular person to question. They had spoken of dark matter being used to attempt activation of a supposed hypergate, but they had not mentioned the Gree at all. What was known about the Gree was so far back in history, so deep in time, that it had taken on the sheen of myth and legend. Lannery wanted to get back to her ship's computer to find out what she could. But first, she had to discover who or what was following her. She imagined that this district of Rahol Yon must be somewhere at the lower end of the tourist experience. The streets were grubby. Some vendors very probably dealt in illegal goods, services, or substances. And the clientele of the various establishments displayed little evidence of being mere visitors. A rough area, but not one in which Lannery felt out of place. Every city on every planet had them, and she had visited many. Sometimes she fit right in. Cloud chasers drifted above. Speeders buzzed along a slightly raised roadway in the center of the street, and several types of indigenous beasts of burden carried people on their backs or limbs. But Lannery chose to walk. It meant that she had complete control of her movements, and it would be easier to keep watch. She wanted to draw her follower out, not escape from him or her. She used the polished shine of speeders, the glass of display windows, and the reflections in the eyes of those passing by to look behind her. And when she could not see, she blinked slowly, casting her senses back to try and discover who and where her pursuer was. It was frustrating. She felt observed, and it could no longer be the usual curiosity for a Jedi Ranger. She had removed her Ranger star to try to blend in. The end of the street opened up into a large market, stalls built across a wide, marble-paved square and suspended on three massive tree-like structures around the square's perimeter. Small cloud chasers moored at some of these trees, ferrying people and freight to and from the larger vessels that buzzed and drifted above. Lannery trotted down the curved stone steps that led to the square. Then she stopped, turned, and ran back up. She paused on the top step and looked around. The street she had walked along was bustling. She looked at people walking toward and past her, human and otherwise. She watched many more walking away. Probing with her senses, touching the pulse of the Force, she felt for any image of herself in someone else's regard, and found it.
Just standing there, watching. Don't forget she's a Ranger. Dangerous. Mysterious.
She touched the haft of her sword and pulled it partway out of its sheath, turning, seeing a Cathar family paused 20 paces from her while the mother and father fussed over their 6 children. Standing just behind them, pretending to be a part of their group and yet so obviously not, was a shape that did not belong. The man was small but stocky, wearing an expansive gray robe and a large mask. Lannery was sure he was Nogri. Reptilian, skilled fighters, prized assassins. As she laid eyes on him, he looked up and met her gaze. She raised one hand, ready to force push him to the ground for the moment she'd need to reach him. He pulled a laser blaster and fired into the family group. Screams, panic, people running, fleeing, falling. The Nogri fired again, shooting at random. Lannery drew her sword and ran at the shooter. He was already fleeing, blaster in one hand and something else in the other. She could not make out what the device was. She reached for him, shoved, but he dodged sideways, and her force punch tripped a beast of burden, spilling its 3 passengers. As she passed the Cathar family, she glanced down and saw the woman on the ground, blood pulsing from a terrible black-tinged wound in her furry scalp.